want you to reconsider your present course of action.
We have no choice.
That is a failure of imagination.
What are you doing here?
Trying to save the universe?
All ships prepare to fight.
It's the end of everything. The sky will crack. The worlds will burn. Show them you're not the enemy. You're not the destroyer.
Transfer complete.
Hello and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge.
This is Tyler Orton leaving his pizza factory on the force of Nepente to join you, of course, on the bridge.
And we are here this time to wrap up the first season of Star Trek Picard with Et in Arcadia Ego, Part 2.
Yeah, you know, it's one of our favorite titles ever, Cam. Let's just dive right into it here. We have the death of Picard. We have the death of Data. I had different reactions to the death, the deaths of these very beloved characters here on the show. Cam, we speculated quite heavily. And of course, we should say that even though maybe these episodes drop on Sundays, we record them immediately after we see them on Thursdays. We're not like Reddit detectives, but I don't know. I think they were kind of like beaten into our heads that Picard was going to die in episode 2. And well, we of course predicted that he would be coming right back in the form of a synthetic. How did this moment work for you? Especially as we saw Elnor sobbing in Raffi's shoulders.
My favorite part of the whole episode, I think, was Picard on his deathbed looking up and being like, Elnor. I like to think that was a complete hallucination.
It means so much to all of us, that character.
Yeah. But no, this didn't work for me at all. This is the classic Disney death. Let's give you the death of a character without like committing to anything whatsoever. My favorite part, and the part I literally laughed out loud at watching, was when basically they give him his new body and they're like, don't worry, nothing's different. Nothing.
Yeah, you're still going to die, just minus that brain problem that you've got there. So it's just like, okay. It's such like a cheat. It's like a pretty much like he's Super Mario and he earns an extra life in the middle of the game. And it's, you know, he doesn't want the game to end. And so it's just like, it does nothing for me from an emotional level because the entire time that I'm watching all this, seeing the characters' reactions, and I have to say, Rios and Raffi, their chemistry, bam, I am so down for this. But seeing those two characters react to it, it didn't have that emotional, you know, tug on the heartstrings that I think they were looking for because I knew it was all going to be resolved in the way that you and I figured it out a week ago. And maybe this is just why it's a show made for, you know, streaming binge mode versus, you know, week-to-week viewing.
I mean, come on. This is lazy, lazy storytelling. This is the epitome of everything people complain about with Disney, Marvel, you know, well, not so much Star Wars, but Marvel and Disney movies in particular, that they've gone to this well over and over and over again. And not only that, you know where else they went to this well? Maybe a little character named Charles Xavier, who died and was reborn in the exact same body from between X-Men 3 and whenever he came back.
Wouldn't it have been amazing if they gave him the same CG body and face that he had in, what was it, X-Men Origins Wolverine at the very end?
That would be amazing. But yeah, it just reminds me so much of like X3, where you had that body in the comatose state with no life functions that just so happens to look exactly like Patrick Stewart. And it's like, they want to give me the death of that character and make me care and then fake me out with the return. And they did that again here. And I'm like, you know, guys, you can't do it with the same actor playing his other icon.
Even beyond that, though, it's just like, does any viewer watch a show called Star Trek Picard and actually buy this moment? Like, I don't know how you actually think this is going to fool anybody. And it just seems like, why is it that there's this idea that death is the ultimate thing that you can do in a series to create dramatic tension? And there's so many other shows. I'm watching Mad Men right now, Cam.
Yeah.
There really aren't, like, murder. There's zero murders going on. But I feel so much tension with regards to the state of people's marriages, relationships, their careers. And it doesn't hinge on whether or not somebody's mortal coil shrivels up. And so this is kind of, it's a frustrating thing because I find it also predictable, beat for beat, everything that's going on here with Picard's death. Just none of it really worked for me. Well, save for one thing that maybe we can get into in just a moment.
Yes, the really good moment in this episode.
Sure. But I'll say that if there's a redemption to a certain thing, remember last week I was saying like, or maybe it's 2 weeks ago, we're talking about how, do I care about these synthetic life forms? Do I believe that they are just as sentient as I am as a organic person? And I'm like, well, no, because I'm living in reality. And if you create AI right now and put it into a robot, I don't really think this robot is an equal the same way that I am. I know as a sci-fi fan, that's probably sacrilege for me to say that, but I'm just being honest in, working reality. When Picard finally turns to Soji and they're like looking at each other and realize, okay, well, we're both, sentient human beings. I did come around on her a little bit. If I can make that leap and I can just buy that for the remainder of the series, Picard's going to be an android who has a limited lifespan, then I can buy it with Soji as well. So I've come around a little bit on her character's conceit. Uh-huh. So that was one thing about this whole death that did work for me beyond maybe, do we want to get into the data stuff?
Yeah, sure. Let's go for it.
Okay, this worked for me. I'm just being honest. Like him saying, Captain, do me one last favor. Please terminate my consciousness. I was just like, oh, this is what they should have given him in Nemesis. This was actually the send-off that I've been, like, hoping for. And at least Star Trek Picard gave us that. Like, how did this work for you? Or maybe it didn't work for you as much. I don't know.
No. The Data moment really worked. I think, honestly, for me, this might be the really only moment that worked for me in this entire episode. I think it's up there. There may be a couple that I'd be willing to maybe concede a bit. But this is the only, I would say, really, really good moment in the episode, arguably great. To me, like, this was just a perfect two-hander between Stewart and Data. You and I had questioned the back and forth of, like, did Picard really love Data? And I felt like this moment at least put a stamp on it where I go, okay, I buy this 100%. So I can go with it now. And also, it felt a lot more natural than the dream sequence we got at the start of the series. This just, for me, worked more emotionally.
Well, it actually felt as if it was Data that we were speaking to, which, and I totally bought into the sci-fi premise of it all, where you're talking about this quantum simulation and his consciousness being transferred. I really did believe that this is the Data that we knew and we've been loving for 30 years.
Oh yeah, 100%. And I thought, like, Spiner was on point. It's one of those things, though, you're like, this would not have been necessary if Nemesis hadn't bungled it. I mean,
yeah, that's true.
I mean, this, like, season was not about, really, about Data that much. So, I mean, like, I'm totally fine with them finding a way to send him off in the finale in style, because he definitely didn't get that in Nemesis. But it just, I don't know, like, I feel like the threads throughout the season are very cluttered to bring me to that particular moment.
Well, and bringing back to something that you mentioned before about, Picard being able to say to Data, I did love you. I think about this pandemic that's going on. And so, Cam, I'm just wondering, is there anything you want to say to me?
I'm good.
We'll wait until we have a quantum simulation and when we're both in our 90s, and then we'll find out for sure.
Exactly. I'll be in the midst of getting put into my robot body.
Okay. I was thinking about the moment where we actually see Data in his smoking jacket, laying down on the couch. They're of course, it's the blue skies going in the background, which is what we started the series off with.
Yeah, different singer, like, though.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah, it was a female singer. I believe it wasn't it Frank Sinatra or something in the debut?
I'm pretty sure it was Brent Spiner singing in the finale.
In Nemesis, it was Brent Spiner. But in the premiere, I believe it was Frank Sinatra.
I'd still like to believe in the finale, it was Brent Spiner as well.
Okay.
Yeah. But that moment as well, like, it was like, and just watching Picard pull those isolinear chips out of the computer console as we go back and forth, you know, between the two characters. And then watching Data just kind of shrivel up.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, gut punch. You got me there, Picard. Maybe I've had some problems with you throughout this season. But this moment it totally felt earned. And I was happy with it.
Yeah, like there was a maturity to the writing of this moment that I felt was largely absent in the rest of the episode.
I don't know, Cam. Pew, pew, pew. Pew, pew, pew.
I mean, yeah.
Although you did call it last week, you were saying, well, I don't think there's going to be this giant showdown in outer space. I think what we're building up to is Picard giving a speech to avert a destructive, you know, fleet battle, which, I mean, like I said before, those things, they generally bore me. I think that Discovery did it quite well in season two finale. But the thing is, like, do they really want to follow up the Discovery season two finale with the Picard season one finale, and is it really going to match it? Like, probably not.
Especially when you don't have Picard like in the flagship ship, you know, he's in like a small little ship that's only going to have such a small impact. Like, who are we really invested in this big space battle? Because like
acting Captain Riker, who says, "I'm going to kick your treacherous Tal Shiar ass."
Fan service to the rescue.
Okay, I'm sorry. How much did like one Jonathan Frakes pay the producers to just make him look so dashing every single moment he's on screen? This is the most flattering stuff that Frakes has ever got to be able to portray as Riker so far in like 30 years.
Well, yeah, when you really think about it, Riker has not really gotten to be that cool on screen in, a long, long time, because, you know, in the movies, he was usually sidelined. I guess you had him like, taking out Lursa and Bator in Generations, that was pretty good, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, even in like Insurrection, he has this big action moment, but it's with a joystick and fans pretty much ridicule that moment. So it's not considered like a really cool Riker moment.
A joystick, Cam, or a manual steering column?
Potato, potato.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, so I mean, it's been a long time since Riker got to be badass on screen. I'm glad we got one. I thought it was really nice to see him. It did remind me a lot of Lando Calrissian in Rise of Skywalker, but I'm willing to go with it because it worked.
Oh, yeah, but if I can pick at something that really annoyed me about this, he gets his Avengers moment because, of course, we have that outer space portal in which literal space demons... I don't understand any of this, are going to be coming out of the space portal, but Picard, he does give that speech in which he tells Soji, look, I trust you. And she relents, and of course the day is saved. So I do love that Picard moment, but I was just kind of shaking my head when, like, space portal was opening. I was just, like, waiting for Tony Stark to fly up in his Iron Man suit and, like, do something there, you know? It's just like, do you understand the constitution of these robotic space demons whatsoever?
No, not at all.
With tentacles?
I'm pretty sure Thanos is in on it.
Okay.
Yeah, that's exactly what it looked like, was those like mechanical ships that came out of the portal in Avengers. Also triggered by a beam shooting into the sky.
Yeah. To me, I the whole sequence, I was just thinking like, oh, they are just kind of aping off like the Marvel third act formula at this point, which I think we talked about it on the show in the last 2 weeks. Like, that stuff bores me like to no end. And I was just like, okay, so this is what we're doing in Star Trek Picard. That's why I appreciate, like, okay, look, they gave us like 12 minutes with kind of like a break, have the emotional moments with the characters and go from there. Like, that's why I can leave off the series. Looking forward to season two based on maybe those last, you know, 7 to 10 minutes. Right. More so than like the preceding 45 minutes.
Yeah. I am fascinated though about those creatures in the portal, because I mean, like, do they not want us to ask, like, what are those all about? Because I mean, like, do these exist in the Star Trek universe? Like, monsters that are ready to tear forth at any moment?
Okay, so maybe they don't come from fluidic space like 8472. Maybe they come from robotic space. Like,
oh, okay.
I don't know. Like, they were trying to make them sound deep, as if they are, you know, supreme beings.
More like God figures. Yeah.
Yeah. Is that what we're to believe? Is that robots? They're not made by man. They're actually made by robot gods. This is stupid, isn't it?
It's like the Kraken. It's the Kraken.
Yeah. I was expecting Picard to pull a Jack Sparrow and like jump right into one of these like robot like tentacles. Yeah.
Like, what kind of Lovecraftian hell does Kurtzman and his team see in the world of Star Trek Picard?
Well, maybe Kurtzman is still in the dark DC, or no, was it the dark Universal Monsters universe?
Yeah,
what were they calling
universe.
It?
Yeah,
dark universe. Yeah, so maybe that's what they're going for. But okay, let's concentrate on maybe some of the other stuff that I'm liking. Seven of Nine. Main character, main cast, season two?
Yeah, that seems exciting, for sure. I mean, we had theorized that this would be the end of her journey on the Picard show, which had me really nervous when she was doing lame things throughout the episode. But yeah, if she's down for more going forward, that's awesome, because I think we just thought, well, I guess a spinoff, but I'm down for her on the Picard crew.
What if they can do to kind of bolster the supporting cast? I'm down for that. Also, totally looks like Seven and Raffi are about to hook up, which, hey, thumbs up for me. They're also doing shots with each other. I think that's going to be a fun dynamic between those two. Let's go back to what I was saying earlier with that moment where they had the ocarina of magic deus ex machina.
That was brutal.
That device, that plot device was brutal. But seeing Raffi and Rios go back and forth with each other, I'm just like, okay, I genuinely do like these characters. I genuinely like Agnes as well. You and I, we've been kind of touch and go on whether the supporting cast can meet our engagements with Picard. I think they suffer very much from being, it's the very fact that it's a spin-off series, but one of the most beloved, one of the top probably like one or two loved characters in all of Star Trek. So of course they're going to, you know, kind of fall by the wayside just because of the shadow of Picard. But these characters, if you take Picard out of the equation, give them their own Star Trek show, I'm really into Raffi, I'm really into Rios, I'm really into Agnes. Like, those three characters totally work for me. I'm happy to see where their journeys go next season moving forward. Add Seven of Nine into the mix. I think there's going to be a lot of cool dynamics going forward. You've got Patrick Stewart in his robot form. That should be interesting. So I'm far more excited about season two, I think, than I am about the overall journey that we went on season one.
Yeah, like, I do think the characters, here's the thing. I think the characters are being like really enlivened a lot by the actors. I think they're being given moments to shine, even if it's like dopey stuff like the, as you said, the ocarina of time here. But like, I just have a lot of concerns about whether the show cares at all about, you know, putting them in stories that actually bring character out of them versus like this sort of busy nonsense, which just culminates in Marvel finales. Like, because so far Discovery has done, a much better job balancing its characters with its plots, even though it gets plot heavy. Whereas like this first season of Picard, I felt with the other characters, aside from Picard, did not do a good job at all.
When we were speculating about a Picard spinoff, we were always kind of wondering if it just made the most sense for it to be a Starfleet Academy spinoff, which Picard could kind of be in the background offering guidance, offering mentorship to the main characters. And, you know, Patrick Stewart would, in the main credits, he would probably get the "and Patrick Stewart" title there. Mm-hmm. I don't see that being the case going into season two. I still see it being a Patrick Stewart-led show. But you throw Seven of Nine in there, you know they're going to give her a lot to do.
Yeah.
I've got so much hope just based on my... I generally like Raffi and Rios and Agnes. And I think they have learned a lot from this first season about what makes these characters work and tick. So that's why I do have hope for season two. But Cam, like, I just... The Soji character, I... I shrug my shoulders at Elnor. We've talked about what a sad sack he is, and yeah. we never ever need to see one Narek again, or as Raffi calls him, the abusive Romulan boyfriend.
But we will see him again.
Why?
You don't think he's coming back?
I don't want him to, but it's like they brought Ash Tyler back, even though we never really need to see him back after season one of Discovery.
I mean, that character got really no final moment in this episode.
Fine by me. Like, I didn't need that from him. Like, he's going to come back, but I'm just like, can they send him off quickly? Like, I wonder if they like the actor. Like, I don't mind the actor. Like, it's just the character is just gives me absolutely nothing.
Well, he strums a mean guitar.
For all those that don't know what you're talking about, Cam.
Yes, it's on, was it Evan Evagoria's Instagram, I think? The actor who plays Elnor?
I saw this on Star Trek CBS on Instagram, but essentially it was a behind-the-scenes photo of pretty much all the main cast strumming acoustic guitar on location. And Cam, this looked painful to me to have to, if I was sitting at that, having to force a smile as they all sang, I don't know, acoustic versions of Tracy Chapman's Fast Car. it'd be tough for me.
Well, you are not a man who loves a sing-along.
You know, I've gone every year to Vegas trying to get my name pulled out for karaoke, and it annoys me. Like, at the Star Trek convention, they always pull out the same names, and they always do the same songs, and it's a bit of a cabal.
Yeah, it is. But I mean, yeah, like, I would happily toss this character to the curb, but I just have a feeling this is going to be a character they're going to lace into quote-unquote intrigue going forward.
Okay, can I throw a prediction out to you?
Yeah.
I think they just did not know what they had on their hands with Rizzo or Nerissa. All we did is see her get kicked off the side of the Borg cube. Is there a chance there's like an offshoot collective that assimilates her body and she's coming back in cyborg form?
Maybe she's the new Borg queen in some way.
That'd be fun. Or as, what did she call 7 of 9? Disgusting half-meat?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
I can't believe that you were calling me that for years, and you finally got that dropped in the episode of Star Trek Picard.
I thought it was a little eye-rolling, though, that Seven's two big moments in this season were killing off seductive female villains who killed her Borg friend.
I know. It's kind of like
twice. They literally repeated the same beat twice.
okay. Our big issue with 7 of 9 this season, though, is what they're giving her to do it in Stardust City Reg, which is commit, you know, first degree murder against Bejazel.
Yeah.
And does it feel as if her character's come full circle since then, that she somehow learned a lesson or anything like that?
Well, I mean, she had that line of dialogue where she said she realized that, you know, killing out of revenge because he didn't want them to be alive or whatever was not a good thing. But, I mean, one line of dialogue is kind of just like putting the button on it to be like, we didn't do the work, but there's the final line.
Yeah. Meanwhile, she did get vengeance for Hugh.
She did indeed.
Yeah, so
that was not a good exit line either for Rizzo. This is for Hugh.
It was very on the nose.
As was much of this episode.
Yeah. So look, I feel mixed about this one because ultimately they do kind of tie the thread on everything that they had built up to. But I just wonder if this is the journey that we were demanding as Star Trek fans to see Picard once again. It just, like, I realize that they can do this.
Yeah.
But the question is, like, why do this particular story? It just, I'm still flabbergasted as to why Patrick Stewart, and I think you said this is not the original story that they pitched to Patrick Stewart, but I'm still baffled as to why Patrick Stewart's like signed up for this again.
I don't know. It's almost like this whole season felt more like it should have been called like Star Trek Universe than Star Trek Picard. I mean, yes, Picard was the central figure, but so much of it was just about tying in all these bits of mythology and often like kind of pushing Picard out of the central frame. Like, yes, he's tied to a lot of this Romulan stuff, a lot of this Borg stuff, but it didn't feel like I was getting a deeply personal Picard story a lot of the time.
I mean, the stuff on the vineyard with his helpers, I like that. But like a lot of times where he's like putting on an eye patch and speaking in a hokey French accent, that's not the stuff that really like works for me. You know, the cheese factor, you know, there seems to be so much more that they could do with the character. And I think the problem is like, I think a character like this, he lends himself better to more episodic television than a big, long 10-hour story that they wanted to tell.
Yeah, I mean, when they give him his speeches at the end of this one, like, I thought they were fine. They totally worked as, Picard speeches. But it's kind of like when Picard gives a speech in an episode of Next Generation, I'm not going to say an easy way, because I think the writers who wrote good TNG episodes had a really hard job. But there's, I'm going to say, just like a simple way to write a Picard speech to sum up the moral of the hour of TV you've watched. There's a big difference between that and writing a speech to sum up like 10 hours of convoluted mythology.
I know. It's kind of like, it felt almost obligatory to a certain degree as opposed to organic. Yeah. Although I did like that one moment where he says, you know, to say you have no choice is a failure of imagination when he was speaking to Sochi. Those are kind of the small moments that, like, I think it's interesting that this show works for me much better as a collection of all these little small moments than it does when you take it as a whole. And so it's not like I was not entertained for the last 10 weeks going through the series, but I just kept wondering, what does it all add up to? And is it worth it to bring back the character for this journey? I would say I'm much happier where we're leaving Picard off at the end of these 10 hours than I would have been had the last time we ever saw Picard was at the end of the 4-film run with Star Trek Nemesis.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was really thinking about that sort of in the last couple minutes of watching this, of like, am I glad they brought Picard back? And I really began to think a lot about Captain Kirk. And, you know, we get his final moment, his big Peter Pan nod at the end of Star Trek VI. And in many ways, that's the perfect exit. That is the riding into the sunset. And then we brought him back in Generations. And I don't know that anyone would say that probably that was worth it when you look at what his exit actually was. But with Picard, it's so different, because you're right. The end of Nemesis is kind of this like weird ending of Picard is alone with B4 and that's it.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, well, is this the end of this man's career? He didn't go out on a high. And it's frustrating. I can see why they wanted to correct it. I have a lot of questions whether like a 3-season show like this is the way to end it. I guess I can only answer that question when we get to the end of the road. But just going off of this first season, I'm kind of like, well, I mean, is next season going to be as busy as this? I mean, I don't know. Maybe. I don't know.
My suspicion is, yes, it will be just as busy as this. But if this is hypothetically the last moment we ever get with Picard,
yeah,
we do get some finality here that I would say is far more satisfying than what we get with Nemesis, where, as you say, he's just sitting there with B4. Like, it's, you feel as if with Nemesis, there's so much more story left to be told. With the end of Star Trek Picard, you feel as if this is a 94-year-old man who dies. We have a sense of finality here. If this is the last we ever see of him, I'm okay with it. I was not blown away by season one of Star Trek Picard. I found it mostly enjoyable with a lot of frustrations mixed in between that. But I can ultimately get behind this more than I would, say, the conclusion of Nemesis.
I mean, I guess I guess it's hard not to side on the side of Picard in that regard. Because you're right, Nemesis was, I don't think anyone was happy with the ending of Nemesis. No one.
So one of the other things that I've been thinking about, though, is playing within the universe of Star Trek. And I think one of the reasons people are drawn into Star Trek, and we talked about it with Barry Link on episode 4 with regards to universe building. And I think the Star Trek universe has this interesting appeal to fans, where you could imagine yourself existing in this universe and finding fun adventures. Whereas I think about the universe that they built in Star Trek Picard, and it doesn't seem as if it's a universe that I'd want to be in at this point. It just, like, a lot of the fun factor seems to be out of it. A lot of, and I hate to say familiarity, because it's not as if I'm somebody who needs to just get a big dose of nostalgia all the time. But,
right,
like, how does this universe that we've gotten built over the last 10 episodes work for you versus what we have known as kind of the Berman era for, you know, kind of the Picard period?
Well, I mean, the thing is, this, a lot of people will say, well, this is a darker, more mature show than what the Berman era was doing. But I think when you look at Deep Space Nine, that's generally regarded as, at least prior to the Kurtzman stuff, the darkest Star Trek. And that was a universe and a world that I thought was fun to go to every week. Whereas, like, Picard, it just doesn't have that sense of, like that hangout factor that I think all of the great Star Trek shows have. It jumps around so much. And, you know, obviously we are so removed from Starfleet at this point. I mean, yes, we got to see Riker here, but Starfleet is well off the side, and I have no idea where these, you know, Picard and crew are going to go off to next, but I don't get the sense the next season's going to be a Starfleet show. And so it's kind of like I don't have these sort of trappings to have this family unit. So I don't know. This seems more like it could be like a Firefly show, I guess. I don't know.
Well, are you just talking about the action sequence with the ship-killing flowers that fly, as Nerik calls them? That made me think of Serenity so much with the Reaver versus Alliance showdown.
Right. Yeah, totally. Yeah, it did. Yeah.
The other thing that I've been thinking about, though, is season four of Star Trek Enterprise, though. They're having fun with what we know about the Star Trek universe, and in a way that no other Star Trek series had really had that much fun before, playing with mythology, giving us the familiar while adding to it, as opposed to just doing the kind of a cynical sort of play towards nostalgia. But this, I think we had moments where we kind of briefly contemplated, oh, look, there's the old school Romulan warbird from the original series. Oh,
that was fun.
There's a possibility of the Borg Queen coming back. But beyond those very brief fleeting moments, it doesn't seem as if they played with a lot of the fun elements that seemed so available to them, aside from bringing back, you know, Seven, Riker, and Troy. And it almost seems, you know, damned if you do, damned if you don't. But a lot of the greatest moments from this were bringing back older characters that we're just very familiar with and are very iconic to fans.
Yeah, and it's interesting because, I mean, Enterprise really did add a lot to mythology. I mean, look at what they did with the Andorians. They added so much in, you know, just a short span of time. And yet I look at what, like, the first season of Picard did with the Borg, and you and I had questions back and forth, like, do we really understand why the Borg are here? Like, hardline, what is this show telling us about the Borg? I'm still waiting for that answer.
I and this is what I hate to say, but I think the answer is, well, it's because they could. But they never asked themselves why they're doing it. And that was a problem that I found very consistent with this show, is like, things would happen, people would appear, events would unfold, only because they had the, you know, budget to do so, they had the creative ability to do so. But I don't know if they really asked themselves why they're doing this so much, and what it really adds to these characters, and what it adds to this universe that we know and love.
Yeah, I mean, you could say, well, you know, they wanted to bring it in to have this moment of Seven plugging into, you know, the cube. But I don't really know that resulted in anything that was that really earth-shaking.
She gave a brief speech last episode and said she felt really cool.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, but it's like, what are the broader implications for that on the character? Is that going to stick with her in a way? We feel really bad for all those Borg drones that were apparently just left behind in outer space to die, which was weird.
Well, they really did treat them like cannon fodder, because you also, of course, had Rizzo going through and just like blasting them by the dozen. And it's like, okay, like they were basically just sacrificial lambs.
But one of the moments that I loved in that episode where Picard returns to the cube is that he's acknowledging, like, they're not monsters, they're victims. Yeah. And well, I guess they're really driving that home by making them victims that much more. But it's like, what do we ultimately get out of this Borg cube situation? I thought the moments with Picard returning to the Borg cube earlier on in the season were very good, but I go back to that question, but like, why are you doing this? Like, why does it need to be a Borg cube that this artifact is versus some other random alien species? Is it only because of the cool factor and that, you know, that fans would like it? And I fear it's more of a cynical play than anything else.
And was this whole like reclamation projects like a widespread thing, or was it just on this one Borg cube that was like, we're leaving?
Who's leaving? Oh, the Borg
cube. The Borg cube, yeah.
Yeah, so it was just on that one Borg cube that they found it. So they're, I guess, doing anthropological studies, getting a better understanding of what was going on. But, I mean, are the Romulans now equipped with a more advanced technology because of these studies? I don't know.
Well, here's a question. Do you think season two Picard, are the Romulans going to be a consistent source of drama throughout that season, do you think? Or are they going to take more of a background role next season?
I mean, if Elnor and Narek are back for season two, then I guess so. You know, the one thing I will add, though, I can appreciate the Romulans aren't super monolithic in this. Like, you have Narek going against what his sister would do. You have O still out and about. You have Elnor and Narek. They're both Romulans, but they do not live by the same code to any degree. So I do appreciate that they're introducing that sort of stuff into the species that could otherwise, and often has been, portrayed as very monolithic.
That's a good point, actually. Yeah, I do think that this show did do a good job in giving a little more diversity to Romulan representation, which, you know, that's what we want these shows to do, especially if they're going to do these serialized arcs. I mean, why not give more diverse portraits of Klingons, Romulans, Andorians, you know, any alien species you're going to tackle, because you have the space to do it. Whereas in the previous series, they had to bounce from story to story, week to week, really.
Yeah. So, I'm curious about how we're going to feel about Star Trek Picard when we do our rewatch, whenever the physical media release happens. Because I think we've appreciated Star Trek Discovery when we binge watch the show much more than, you know, just kind of picking it apart week to week.
Yeah.
Do you think a lot of the stuff that we're getting hung up on is just going to kind of fly right over our heads, or do you think it's still going to gnaw at us the way that it is right now at the end of season one?
I suspect it'll gnaw at me. I think there'll be a few annoying things in terms of like teasing mysteries won't probably faze me as much, or even like the Soji and Narek stuff on the cube will probably fly by a lot quicker when you're doing it in binge mode. But I feel like, you know, a good story, you kind of want to be in a straight line. And this like whole show was so up, down, all over the place, that by the time I got to the end, I just kind of felt breathless. And I mean, I hope that a rewatch fixes that, but I have a bad feeling that it won't.
Yeah. I mean, there's stuff that we can go back and probably appreciate more. Kind of knowing that O would be kind of this larger antagonist. I mean, she's got to be back. I think she's got to... I think they realize O is kind of a cool character and they'll be bringing her back for season two. I'm still kind of... Riker didn't really seem to react that much that the head of Starfleet security was commanding a fleet of Romulan warbirds. And I was very confused because remember last episode, the Romulans were calling her Commodore, and then Riker had the remark, Commodore, General, whatever your name is. And then the Romulans started calling her General. And just like, I think the Romulans just call her whatever the last Starfleet officer called her. And that's pretty much like...
Well, given her presence in this episode, I was calling her Palpatine.
Wow. Okay. So, hopefully we don't have to deal with any O clones, or as I call them, Cam, clones.
But you were asking about the binging thing. I think I will still find it very frustrating that when we get to the final episode, short of Agnes, the main crew really contributes nothing to the like solving of the problem.
Well, and that's just it. Like, when they were, like, taking us through the caper, and you know how they've been doing this weird edit with the caper? Like,
yeah.
I think this is the third time they've done it this season. I didn't understand anything about what their plan was. I was incredibly confused. It made no sense to me, and I didn't care as it was unfolding.
Well, you can see now why, like, heist, like, stories, really good heist stories, are really difficult to write. Because this was not a good case of it.
Yeah, and they tried to do like three of these throughout the season, and yeah. I don't think any of them landed at all.
No, and I thought it was pretty funny that this whole thing was to smuggle a grenade in a soccer ball into this, into this scenario, and then throw the grenade to Soji.
And then guess what? She threw it up in the air and it blew up.
Good move, guys.
Also, I was quite amazed at how effectively they were fighting androids that have superhuman strength. Just like, these are all like three humanoids. Props to them for, I guess, what would have to be some pretty badass mixed martial arts training.
Yeah, when it just kind of devolved into a martial arts fight, I was like, come on. Like, I've seen androids fight in like previous Star Trek shows. They would be just destroying these fools.
Look, Cam, these are the same androids that die from getting a brooch stabbed into their eyeballs. So.
Very true. What did you think of the final moment of Sutra, which felt very truncated?
He pushed a button and she turned off. Okay. Good for you, Dr. Sung.
I mean, Lore always was more difficult to take down than Sutra was.
Yeah, no kidding. Let me ask you about this. Okay, remember when Dr. Sung turned to Agnes and it was like he made a remark to her about like being a martyr. And what I jotted down in my notes was Sinister Spiner. And I think Sinister Spiner is just so effective. And I do you remember that very brief period in the mid 1990s. Where it looked as if Brent Spiner was going to be a breakout movie star with like turns in Independence Day and Phenomenon and what was it? What was the cruise movie?
Out to Sea.
Out to Sea. And it's just like Brent Spiner was a rising star in Hollywood for about 18 months. I think what missed though is like they never cast him in a truly sinister serial killer sort of villainous role during that era.
Yeah, that would have been really fun to see in a movie. I mean, it was fun to see him do that in Enterprise when he played Soong's ancestor, where he got to play an actual villain. I am very curious if this Soong pops up again because it feels like there's plenty left on the table for him to come back.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not exactly sure what reason he has, but he could easily have a reason, I guess.
Yeah, he comes back to turn Sutra back on.
He comes back to steal Picard's body. He's like, that's mine. It's mine. Give it back.
Well, he just pushes a button and turns Picard off, and that's how you can kidnap him.
Well, are these golem bodies easy to make? Like, is he going to make one for himself?
I would assume so.
Okay.
So he can live forever.
Yeah.
And look, I am glad. Okay, we thought it was kind of stupid, but I don't like the idea of Picard living ad infinitum, you know, like that just would be very frustrating because I think there's a lot of speculation that Picard would be meeting up with the Discovery crew in season 3 because he's got this android body. I like how everybody on the internet was predicting this android body transfer, which if you're a writer, I don't think you want everybody predicting what you're going to do.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that they give him a kind of a finite lifespan here. I don't know if Dr. Alton Soon would give himself a finite lifespan, though.
No, I think he would go for the immortality. He seems like the type.
But even Data, he wanted his consciousness to be terminated.
Yes, yes. And
so,
I mean, that really does close the arc of Data, of this whole wanting to be human. And as I initially kind of noted, I mean, had they given this line of dialogue in Nemesis, they wouldn't have had to do all this. But I think it was actually worth it, probably just to have this moment of the two of them sitting down, than like a one line of dialogue in a motion picture aimed at the mainstream.
Yeah, yeah. No, I totally agree with you. I don't know, Kim, do you have any other thoughts? Oh, you know, maybe if we're kind of winding up our thoughts on this, I want to go back to 7 of 9 because it did stick with me, those moments when we open up with a Borg cube. And I have to say, that was a gorgeous shot of the Borg cube in the sea as we pan around it. I absolutely love that. That might be my favorite shot of the entire episode. Mm-hmm. But we have 7 of 9. I was thinking, what is her life after Voyager? She doesn't really have a family. She has Egypt, who she's probably mentoring still, but she's disconnected from what was her human family of 4 years. And I kind of, like, I felt really bad for her. And it's just like, she's lost at this point. Like, who does she really have in her life? Like, Tom and B'Elanna are going to pursue their own life. Tuvok's going back to his wife and children. Neelix is on the asteroid planet. Harry Kim is hopefully getting promoted to junior grade lieutenants or something and off on a mission. Like, she really has nobody at this point. And so you can kind of see how she, maybe that's why she's going to seek out vengeance. I don't know. It's just, I felt for the character in this.
Yeah, I mean, Chakotay's obviously out of the picture and there's no way they ever mention him again, right?
I didn't even bring him up. You did.
Yeah, I know. I will always bring up Chakotay. But you're right. Like, she has no one. And Picard's ship is already this ragtag team of individuals who are kind of lost. And now they're found as a family. Kind of like Firefly, I guess. But she makes complete sense to have on this team. I'm just very unclear. Like, what is their thing now?
Well, Kim, I think you hit the nail on the head. They are the crew of Firefly. Let's fan cast. Who is the Malcolm Reynolds of this crew?
Well, does it have to be Picard? Because he's like, Okay,
Let me pitch this to you.
Yeah, go for it.
I think Picard has to be the Dr. Simon Tam of the situation. Just the more kind of like hoity-toity, kind of flabbergasted by these rough and tumble kinds of people. Because isn't Rios the Malcolm Reynolds of this crew?
Yeah, and he's tormented like Mal was as well.
Yeah, and if we're talking about a soldier, I think Zoe has to be Raffi, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So Soji's the river. Any argument about that?
Nope.
Okay.
Wait, you think Picard's Simon or is he Book?
Oh, you know what? You're right. I give him the Book treatment.
Yeah, kind of the wise old man.
Wise old man. Okay.
The morality of the ship.
So maybe that means Agnes is Simon. Do you think that makes sense? New to outer space is kind of put off by the danger of it all?
Oh, yeah, totally. Because not only that, but she has a connection to the River Tam character in Soji in this, being a specialist in robotics and androids.
So what is 7 of 9 in this ragtag crew?
You're forgetting Elnor, Tyler.
Oh, well, Elnor is Jane.
Yeah, obviously, yeah. I guess Wash? The seven, like, toy dinosaurs?
She never did, she wasn't in Distant Origin, the Voth, that's what they were called, the Voth.
Yeah, I guess, is Seven a leaf on the wind?
She's a reformed Reaver.
Works for me.
Instead of an XB, she's an XR.
moving past this, I have a question for you. What is this show's obsession with phasers to the head?
I don't know.
It's very like, weird.
I think maybe it's a visceral image, and I thought it was a very mean thing for Nerissa to say to Seven. Like, you're a 6-year-old. Why don't you just take a phaser to the head?
Yeah. Like, there was a lot of phasers to the head in this series. Like, whether they were being shown on screen or just that line was being, you know, saying phaser to the head was being said out loud. This show really hammered that point home over and over again.
Well, Cam, it ain't your daddy's Star Trek, that's why.
But I think if Star Trek's shown us anything, it doesn't really matter where you get hit with a phaser. You're probably going to go pretty quick.
Yeah, no, that's true.
You tend to just dissolve into like a cloud very quickly.
Yeah, much like when Data dissolved into dust at the very end of this episode.
So we did not get any sort of cliffhanger, really, other than the group going off into space. There was many predictions, us included, that we might see Q in the, you know, as a final teaser. Were you glad that there wasn't a Q teaser or any other, you know, cliffhanger moment?
I'm actually okay with that. Because it just would not have made that much sense unless you were trying to wedge him into the whole death sequence. But Q has to know that Picard's consciousness is now in a new body. He can still torment him that way.
Yeah,
it would have taken away from the data stuff if all of a sudden Q shows up, you know? So I'm actually, as much as we wanted to see him, I much prefer that we did not in this.
Yeah, I think it was right to end the episode with the crew going off in their ship. Like, had you had a moment where you have this moment, they're all gathered together, you know, Patrick Stewart says, engage. And then we cut to the next scene of him walking into his, like, private quarters, sitting down, content, the mission's over, he can relax. And then Q pops in. It would have just felt cheap.
I know, I would not have been down for that.
So. Yeah, and as it was, they kind of sagged into their credits in a way that was different than past episodes. It felt a little more cinematic with the credit roll and the music playing.
I loved those credits. I was actually waiting for like a stinger to happen at the end. Did you stay to watch the stinger, Cam?
I sat waiting for one.
Oh man, I can't believe that you missed the return of one Sonia Gomez, now a captain.
Oh geez, I thought it was going to be Argyle.
Well, she's, or he's her first officer. Robin Leffler's at the helm.
I'd be down for that. Ashley Judd would totally do a Star Trek show, I think, now.
If we got Captain Leffler, I'd be down for that. Yeah.
That is an actor they should be talking to because she has star presence. I mean, in terms of like motion pictures, I'd say her career's dimmed a bit, so she's not working a ton in movies. So, you know, you could get her to lead or have a major role in a Star Trek show and you'd have that continuity, but you could also really delve into that character for the first time ever because it's not like she's that well explored, but you have a really like noteworthy actress.
Well, it would be great if it was a sequel to TNG's The Game.
I don't want the game to end. I will say this, though. While I found this season of Picard very frustrating, I would also be remiss not to mention that the first seasons of, TNG are really frustrating. DS9's kind of frustrating. Voyager was a little bit frustrating.
Voyager went on a high note with learning curve. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. Enterprise season one's all right. It's not a great season, but it's, I think, a solid season. But overall, like, Star Trek does not have a good track record for first seasons, and I think Discovery was bumpy as well. I think I still prefer season one Discovery to season one Picard, I think. Of course, I've seen Discovery.
Yeah,
I've seen Discovery season one, you know, a couple times now or three times, but so maybe I'll feel differently when I rewatch Picard. But yeah, I mean, I think Discovery season one had equally annoying pitfalls as Picard, and a finale that I also found very frustrating. That first season finale of Star Trek Discovery was. It didn't have the same problems as this one. It wasn't like ultra derivative like this episode was, but it had problems that made it frustrating and not the most satisfying.
Well, it's interesting going into it. You and I, we actually had lower expectations. We've been looking forward more to Star Trek Lower Decks because I think the fear is that Picard would only disappoint. I think when we watched episode one, we're like, okay, we see this. It's on the right track. And I think the problem was that they just went into all these weird, different, divergent directions. You've mentioned many a times that the tone seems to shift dramatically within episodes. There's stuff that never worked for us, like the Narek and Soji stuff, you know? So it was a show that just made us scratch our heads a lot because you're using such an iconic character played by such an actor of gravitas. So it was kind of a frustrating experience, but it was a journey I was still glad to go on, no matter a lot of my hangups on this.
Yeah. And do you think that this season had like a easy pitch? Like, could you pitch what this show was about in a sentence? You're good at doing that.
I was thinking about this, though. And I'll say that with Star Trek Discovery season one, season two, I was never able to sum up what the show was. Like, I could never tell you what the show is about.
Yeah.
You know, if I go into a Hollywood studio to pitch what Star Trek Picard is, I would say it's about a great man that's reached the end of his life who needs to learn to keep on living somehow. And right. Is that really going to sell a show to somebody? I think the problem with like a spinoff like this is it's all hinging on a magnificent character that we're all familiar with. And that's the problem. Like, so what is Star Trek Picard? Well, I guess sum it up quickly. It's a ragtag crew led by a great man whose star has faded, but he has one last mission. So that's my way of summing it up.
Yeah.
Whereas season one of Star Trek Discovery, Cam, I still don't have a clue about like what is the one sentence pitch for that show. Like I could never, I still can't tell you.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you can just tie it to a Klingon war, but it's so convoluted that that doesn't really add up what the actual season's about.
But you'd also, you wouldn't say that it's Star Trek Discovery. That's a show about the Klingon war.
Yeah, like, I know.
Whereas at least with Star Trek Picard, you can say that's a story about a ragtag crew being led by a great man whose star has faded. I think that's an easy thing, a much easier summary than anything you could do with Discovery.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, hopefully finding like a family later in life. I was a little bummed that Riker didn't beam down when he was dying.
Yeah, he had to take off. He had to escort L.O. out of Federation space.
Do you think that Riker even knows that Picard died?
It'd be kind of disturbing if Android Picard had to deliver his corpse to one Riker. That would be an awkward moment right there.
And then Picard jumps out and is like, boo! Maybe they'll bury his body on that synth planet under a pile of rocks like Picard, and then like Kirk.
But then it regenerates with the regenerative soil. You got two Picards.
Oh my god. That would be
pizza
amazing.
Pizza party.
Okay. So I think on that note, our assignment is complete. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, we want to hear from you. Jump on over to the Facebook page at facebook.com/subspacepod. We won't have a video up again this week because, again, as the corona continues to rage on, we remain housebound. Okay, you can, of course, find us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam, V is in violent end for Rizzo Smith.
You can find me at Reportin, that's R-E-P, P is in pizza party, O-R-T-O-N.
Okay, so until next time, the arena is closed.
Blue skies smiling at me. Nothing but blue skies do I see.
Transfer complete.